Book of Daniel last week, and my intention tonight is to just do a couple of stories from Daniel, starting with chapter 5, and then just some brief remarks about the last half of Daniel, and then we're going to move into Esther, is my plan for tonight. In chapter 5, it begins talking about Belshazzar, and it refers to him as the son of Nebuchadnezzar. There are some scholars believe that he probably was really a grandson, not a son, but that would not be unusual in writing, especially in the Hebrew language, the Aramaic, to refer to a grandson as a son. It just means a descendant a lot of times. So it doesn't really make any difference one way or the other, but it does refer to him as his son, and we'll call him his son here. And there's some indication even from this chapter that it might very well be son, and that might be a better, that really is accurate. But he held this great feast, and he invited 1,000 people. That's a big party. He invited 1,000 people for this big party he threw. And they had all kinds of wine and gold vessels. And he basically told them that they could drink what they wanted to. And so they were all drinking and drinking from the gold vessels. And then he got this bright idea that he would bring the gold vessels that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from Jerusalem, from the temple in Jerusalem. And so he sent for these gold vessels that had been dedicated to God, and he brought them, and they were drinking wine from them, and they were praising their gods, the gods that were idols, and as they were drinking the wine. And so it says they drank and praised the gods of gold and silver and bronze and iron and wood and stone. And all of a sudden, the hand of a man appeared on the wall, on the palace wall, and it was writing something on the wall. It says that Belshazzar, I like verse 6, his face grew pale, his thoughts alarmed him, his hip joints went slack, and his knees began knocking. In other words, he was scared to death. He didn't know what in the world this was, but that hand was writing on the wall. And so he called for all the wise men, and he says, come and tell me what this means. And he said, I'll reward you, I'll give you all these gold and clothes and wonderful things. I'll promote you to a high position, and you'll have it made the rest of your life. You'll just tell me what that means. Well, all of these wise men and soothsayers and diviners and so on came, and none of them could read the inscription or give the interpretation. And so he was greatly alarmed. And it says that his face grew even paler, and his nobles were perplexed. And then the queen entered the banquet, and I suspect that this is not his wife, but his mother. And the reason I say that is because what she says to him. She says, your father Nebuchadnezzar had a man in his kingdom that had the spirit of the holy gods. He had illumination, insight, wisdom like nobody else. And he said, Nebuchadnezzar, your father, the king, appointed him chief of all these magicians. And she said, if you can get him to come in, he can tell you what this means. And so King Belshazzar called for Daniel, and he was brought in before the king. And the king again, he began to tell him, I understand you can do all these wonderful things. And he said, I'll give you all this gold, and I'll do all these things for you, and clothe you in purple, and you'll be, you know, third in command of the kingdom, and or be a ruler over a third of the kingdom. And so Daniel said, I don't want your stuff, but I'll tell you what it means. And so he read, but before he told him, he said, let me tell you something. He said, O king, your father Nebuchadnezzar became very proud, and God smote him because of his pride. He was driven away. His glory was taken away from him. He was deposed from his throne. He was driven out to live as an animal for 7 years until his mind came back to him. and he realized that God is the Most High God, and he is the one who puts rulers in and takes them out, and he does according to his will. He is ruler over the realm of mankind, and he sets over it whomever he wishes. He said, yet you, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, even though you knew all this. But rather you've exalted yourself, you've brought the vessels of gold that belong to God, and you have desecrated them, and in doing so you have praised the gods of wood, of gold and silver and bronze and wood and stone and so on. He said, now I'm going to tell you what it means. The writing says, meeni, meeni, tekel, upharsin. And what that means is, meeni means God has numbered your kingdom and put an end to it. Now, tekel means you have been weighed on the scales or balances and you're found deficient. Perez or upharsin means your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. And what that means is that you're going to have the kingdom taken away from you. He ordered that Daniel be promoted and given all this stuff, but that night, King Darius of the Medes came into the city, and King Belshazzar was killed. So that was the end of the Babylonian Empire. The Medes and the Persians took over. It was sometimes referred to as the Medo-Persian Empire, or sometimes just the Medes and Persians. But they took over. Now, Darius, who was king of the Medes, also liked Daniel. Everywhere Daniel went, he found favor with the people. And that just tells you, number one, tells you something about him. It tells you, number two, that God's with him. I think there's both of those, because I think part of it is Daniel and his wisdom and his personality, but I think also a lot of it has to do with the fact that, and it says sometimes that God blessed him and caused these things to happen too. But Daniel was seeking to serve the Lord in every way he could. But Daniel was promoted. He was put in charge of Darius appointed 120 satraps. They'd be charged of the whole kingdom. Over them, three commissioners, and Daniel was one of these. And then Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners. We're in chapter 6. And because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and this is where God is blessing him. So the king planned to put him over the three. He was going to be over the whole kingdom. Well, these guys were jealous. They did not like that, and so they began to try to find something against Daniel that they could go to the king and they could find something against him. Finally, after a while, they concluded, and this is probably one of the best compliments of anybody that you could read, especially in a high government position. They concluded that if we're going to find anything against Daniel, it will not be related to the kingdom or the law, because he does everything exactly right. He doesn't do anything shady. He doesn't do anything underhanded. Everything he does is exactly according to the law. And so if we're going to find something against him, it's going to have to be something about the way he worships his God. That's going to be the only thing we're going to be able to find against him. And so they went to the king and they said, all of the conjurers and the satraps have joined together, O king, and we have decided that what you need to do is you need to issue a decree that anyone who prays or makes a petition to any god or to any man besides you for 30 days will be cast into the den of lions. Now, they began that by saying all of the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, have agreed on this. Was that true? No, it was not true. Daniel didn't even know anything about it. And he was the head of them. He was right at the top. And yet they were doing it underhandedly, intentionally trying to get Daniel trapped. They knew that they could do that. So the king, being king, said, that sounds fine to me. And it's hard for us to imagine somebody that says, okay, I'll be God for 30 days. But the fact is, there have been many monarchs or emperors or other titles that they've had that have claimed to be deity. They claim that they represent God in some way or that they are God. And so this is not really unusual in the light of history as you look at it. But he agreed to it, and he signed it, and then he stamped it with his seal. Now the Medes and the Persians had a law that said any time the king made a decree or a law and stamped it with his seal, it could not be changed. It didn't make any difference what it was, how bad it was, or anything else. And we're going to see that in this story. We're going to see it again in Esther, the same thing. And so it is irrevocable. Once it was stamped and sealed by the king, it was irrevocable. And so they immediately sent out this petition or this injunction to everybody, and told everybody in the kingdom that this is what you've got to do. You've got to bow down. You can't worship anybody but the king for the next 30 days. Well, Daniel had a habit of going to his room with his window open toward Jerusalem and prayed three times a day. He didn't make any pretense, and just from what I read, he doesn't try to make a big show of it or anything. I don't think he was doing it for that purpose at all. At the same time, he doesn't try to hide it. He just goes. That's his custom, and he does it, and that's just what he does. Three times a day, he goes there, and he prays to God facing Jerusalem. When this order was issued, Daniel just kept doing exactly what he had always been doing. And he just kept worshiping God. We need to, I think, take a lesson from that even though sometimes people may tell us that we're not supposed to worship, if God says worship, we need to be worshiping. It says, verse 10, that he knew the document was signed, but what did he do? He went to his house three times a day, opened the window, and prayed to God, facing Jerusalem. They watched him just because they knew this is exactly what he would do. They went to the king and they said, "O king, did you not sign this decree that anybody that prays to any other god would be thrown in the den of lions?" He said, "Yep, we did. I did." They said, "Well, this Jewish guy named Daniel that you brought in, that was brought in here with the exiles, he prays to his God every day, three times a day. And King, you signed it and it can't be changed." And so it says, verse 15, that the men came by agreement to the king and said, "Recognize, O king, that's the law of the Medes and the Persians, that no injunction or statute which the king established may be changed." They want to make sure that he don't back out. They want to make sure that he for sure does what he said he'd do. The king was greatly distressed. He spent all day trying to figure a way to get out of it, of putting Daniel in the lion's den. I found that rather interesting. You remember when Nebuchadnezzar built the big statue and he said, "Bow down and worship the statue when the music plays," and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to bow down? What was his reaction? How did he react to them not doing that? Okay. He was mad, but he was going to give them a second chance. And then when they told him, "We're not going to do it, no matter what you do or say," he really got mad. I mean, it says he was furious. So much so that he heated the furnace up seven times hotter than normal. You see the opposite reaction here. Darius really cares about Daniel. He's concerned about Daniel. And he obviously has a lot of respect for Daniel. Excuse me. Has a lot of respect for Daniel. And so he tries to figure, but he can't. And so he had Daniel taken. They removed the stone where the lion's den was. They threw Daniel down in it. They put the stone over it and even sealed the stone with the signet ring to make sure that it was followed. The law was followed exactly, the decree that was given. But he said, he spoke to Daniel, the king did, and he said, "Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you." He said, I know that your God can save you. He will. And so it says that sleep fled from him all night. And he didn't call for any entertainment. Usually when king couldn't sleep, he'd have somebody come entertain him. He didn't want any entertainment. He was worried about Daniel. He wasn't concerned about anything else other than Daniel. Early the next morning, he got up. He ran to the lion's den, had them move the stone, and he cried out. He said, "Oh, Daniel, are you okay?" And Daniel said, "O king, live forever. My God sent an angel and shut the lion's mouths, and they've not harmed me." He said, "Because I was found innocent before God and innocent in your sight." And so he ordered that Daniel be taken out. And then he ordered that the men who had set Daniel up, not only them, but their whole families, be thrown into the den of lions. And it says that before they even hit the ground in the lion's den, the lions had crushed their bones. So they all died that way. So then Darius wrote this decree, saying that, "I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For he's a living God, enduring forever. His kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. His dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel enjoyed success. All right, any question on any of it down through chapter 6? Comment. Right. He does. Jesus said, "Your Heavenly Father knows what you need before you even ask, but still ask Him." So yes, you're right. And it's like, I think maybe last week I mentioned it about the thing I saw on Facebook. It says that, you know, you can pray for a hole, but you can't just stand and lean on the shovel. You gotta dig, you know, so. The fact is that yes, sometimes, and there are exceptions, sometimes there are things we pray for that only God can do, and there's not anything we can do but wait, and we can pray for wisdom, know when to wait and when to do something. But yeah, I think that, again, one of the things that I have seen, and it's really bothered me a lot, really, the last several years, is I have seen, I guess because Facebook, and I see it so much on Facebook, but I have seen so many people that from what I know of them and I see of them even in their Facebook posts that don't really seem to be trying to do anything to serve God or live for God or anything else. But then they, when something bad happens, they won't talk about, well, God protects us and God takes care of us and all that. Well, God has never promised to take care of anybody that doesn't put their trust in Him and serve Him. And, you know, I think that sometimes people want to claim the promises and the benefits without really serving God and giving Him their life. That disturbs me. And I don't mean to be judgmental in saying that, but I've seen some where it's pretty obvious if you look and listen to things they say and do. All right, anything else? Beginning in chapter 7 and going through chapter 12, the end of the book, is a series of visions that Daniel had. We actually back up to the time of Belshazzar. It's not chronological here. We back up and then go through. But each of these visions, and we could spend a lot of time looking at each one and talking about all the various symbols and stuff. And excuse me, it is apocalyptic type writing. much like the book of Revelation, with a lot of symbols and figures and so on. But basically, what all of these are, and the angel talked to Daniel and explained to him that all of this has to do with the end times. That does not necessarily mean the end of time, but rather it refers to what Peter calls in Acts chapter 2. He says, he quotes from Micah, and he says, in the last days. And so that is the end times. We are living in the end times. And what each of these visions do in some degree, some more than others in various aspects of it, but they explain that the Babylonian Empire is going to be taken over by the Medes and the Persians. The Medes and the Persian Empire will be taken over by the Greeks, and the Greek Empire will be taken over by the Romans, and then there will be a kingdom that will come that will last forever during the time of the Roman Empire, and then the Roman Empire will be destroyed, but not from an enemy. It'll be destroyed from within. And this is exactly what happened. In fact, he even names some of these kingdoms. And this is exactly what happened. The Babylonian Empire was taken over by the Medes and the Persians. Belshazzar was killed, as we just saw a while ago. The Greek Empire, I believe Alexander the Great, if I'm not mistaken, is the one who conquered the Medes and the Persians. And the Greek Empire then flourished for some time, and then the Roman Empire. And it was during the time of the Roman Empire that God's kingdom, as we call the church today, was established, which will last forever. And the Roman Empire imploded because of their ungodliness and immorality, not because of an outside enemy. They destroyed themselves from within with their ungodliness. And so every bit of this happened exactly like these visions show. Some of the visions concentrate more on some parts of that than others, but that's basically what's in every one of them as you go through it. All right, any questions or comments? I know you probably got a lot of questions if you read it. Because there's a lot of symbols and stuff and some really weird-looking beast and all that kind of stuff, but I didn't want to get into that in this study is the reason I didn't do it. All right. Any question or comment on Daniel? If not, we're going to move to Esther. All right, let's go to Esther chapter 1. King Ahasuerus, and you may pronounce that differently, but that's the way I've always pronounced it, so that's what I'll call him. King Ahasuerus was king over, it says, from India to Ethiopia. And so he had 127 different provinces. And he gave a big party. And his party lasted for 6 months. And he ordered that during that 6 months, if people wanted to drink, it was there and it was free and they could drink all they wanted, but if they didn't want to, they didn't have to. He wasn't going to compel anybody to drink if they didn't want to. But just enjoy it. And it says a drink was served according to the king's plentiful bounty. After some time, and it says Queen Vashti gave a banquet for the women in the palace which belonged to King Ahasuerus. On the seventh day of this big banquet, the king was feeling pretty good. He was drunk. And he ordered that his queen Vashti be brought in to show her beauty to all of these men. I've heard all kinds of interpretations of what that implied. I'm not really sure exactly what it implied. But whatever it was, she didn't want to be paraded in front of all these men in whatever form he had in mind. And so She refused to come. Well, this upset the king, and so he called his advisors, and he said, what am I going to do? He said, I don't know what the law says about that, but what am I supposed to do if the queen refuses to obey my order? Well, his advisors told him, said, this is a real problem, because if the queen can get away with disobeying you, then that means that every woman in the Medo-Persian Empire can get away with disobeying their husband. And that means that all the women are going to rebel against their husbands, and their husbands will be held in contempt by their wives. So you've got to do something. And so they said, what we would suggest is that you banish Queen Vashti so that she would not be queen anymore and that she would never see your face again. He said, okay, that sounds good. So we did that. Well, after a while, he sobered up and he started missing Queen Vashti. And so then he wasn't happy about it, but he had already done it and he couldn't back out of it because, as it says here, it was signed and sealed and the king couldn't back out. The Medo-Persian king, that was a part of their law that once he decreed something, he couldn't back out of it. So now he had a problem. What was he going to do? They suggested to him, what you need to do is have a beauty contest. Let us go out and find the prettiest women in all of the kingdom and we'll bring them in and we'll get them prepared and ready and then you can decide which one you want and the one you choose will be your new queen. He said, that sounds good. So that's what they did. And so they went out and they brought in all these women from all over the kingdom for him to choose a queen from. There was a Jew who lived here in Susa, the city where the king is, named Mordecai. Mordecai had a niece that he had raised as his own daughter, and her name was Esther. And she was very beautiful. And she was chosen by these men that were sent out by the king as one of the most beautiful women in the kingdom. And she was taken. She found favor with the eunuch who was over these women that were brought in. And he really showed her special attention and did all he could to help her and so on. And so eventually the time came that she was supposed to go in to the king. And the process was they would go into the king, they would spend the night with the king. If he selected this one, if he called her by name to come back, then she would be the one that would be made queen. If not, then this girl that he had been with all night would go into his harem of concubines. And so that was the process that they followed, that the king followed. And so when Esther went in, though, she was chosen as the one that he wanted. He loved her and he wanted her. Mordecai would stay outside the king's palace gate every day to find out about Esther, make sure she is okay, and make sure everything was going like it was supposed to. There was a man in the kingdom named Haman. Haman was about as egotistical as anybody could possibly be. And he had gotten promoted, and finally he was like right under the king, and so he expected everybody to bow down to him. In fact, the king had ordered a decree, when Haman goes through town, everybody bow down to him. When he comes in and out of the gates, everybody bowed down to him. Well, Mordecai refused to bow down to him. He didn't want to pay homage to a man, and so he refused to bow down to Haman. Haman really got upset about it, and he was just extremely angry. And so he went into the king and he said, you've got this group of people in your kingdom. They don't follow your laws, they don't worship your gods, and it would be to your advantage if you just totally wipe them out, you annihilate these people and get rid of them. Because they're not any good. King didn't really care one way or the other, and this just tells you something about Ahasuerus and the kind of guy he was. Here they're going to wipe out this whole nation of this whole population, this whole ethnic group of people in the kingdom. And he said, I just do whatever you want to do. Haman even offered to pay for it. He said, just keep your money and here's my ring. Just you write it up and sign it. Whatever you say, it's okay. And so, it didn't bother him. They were going to kill hundreds of thousands of people. That didn't make any difference to him. And so, he didn't know who they were. Haman didn't tell him who they were. He just said, you got these people. Well, when they issued the decree, and it was going to be on the 13th day of a certain month, I believe it was the 12th month, if I remember correctly, but there was a certain day of the month that they were going to kill all these Jews. Well, Mordecai found out about it. And so Mordecai began wearing sackcloth, Esther found out that he was wearing sackcloth, and she sent some clothes out there and told him to get dressed, and he refused. And so she sent word back and said, what's going on? What's wrong? And so he took a copy of the letter that had been sent out and sent it back to Esther and said, now you need to understand that you're a Jew too. And if all the Jews are killed, that means you'll be killed just like the rest of us. It's not just our people and our family, but it'll mean you too. And so you need to go into the king and you need to talk to the king and see if there's something that can be done to stop this. She said, you can't just go into the king. If you approach the king uninvited and he does not hold out his golden scepter to welcome you, then you're put to death. So you just didn't go in and talk to the king uninvited unless you were willing to risk your life. Mordecai said, look, how do we know that you're not in this position for this very reason? Because if you don't do it, you're going to die. So you better go in there and you better do it. So she went in and decided that she was going to do it. Meanwhile, the king, let me see. Okay, so Esther went into the king, and the king said, okay, what do you want? He said, I'll give you up to half of the kingdom or whatever. She said, I want you to come to a dinner, you and invite Haman. And so he ordered Haman to come, and they went to this dinner and said, okay, what is your request? Even up to half of the kingdom, you tell me what you want. This is in chapter 5. And she said, if it please the king, would you and Haman come to a dinner tomorrow, and then I'll tell you. And so he said, okay. So Haman went home feeling good. He got home. He told his friends and his wife, his family. He said, look, here I have been promoted. I'm second in command to the king. The queen had a party today, a banquet. She invited me and the king and nobody else, and we're invited to one tomorrow. But I noticed on the way home that Mordecai refused to bow down to me. I need to do something to get rid of him. They said, well, you need to build some gallows 50 cubits high, which would be 75 feet. Build some gallows and hang him. He said, that sounds good. So he ordered the gallows to be built. Well, meanwhile, that night, the king couldn't sleep. And so he ordered that they come and read the chronicles to him. And I skipped over this earlier, but Mordecai had been at the king's gate, and he heard these two men talking that were going to assassinate the king. And he sent word to Esther, who got word to the king. They investigated, found out it was true, and put these two men to death. That was read to him in the chronicles that night. He asked the guy that was reading, he said, what was done to honor Mordecai? And he said, nothing. Well, about that time, somebody came in the courtyard outside, and he said, who's that out there? And they said, Haman. He said, tell Haman, come in here. So Haman came in and he said, Haman, if the king wanted to honor somebody above anybody else in the kingdom, how would I do that? Haman said to himself, he said, now who is the king going to honor more than me? So he said, what I need to do, he said, king, what you need to do is you need to have this man ride on your mule and be led through town and wearing your robes and have everybody bow down to him. And honor him like that. He said, that's good. He said, you go get Mordecai and you put him on my royal steed and you lead him through town and you do exactly what you said. Can you imagine how humiliated and how mad he must have been? He had gone in to ask permission to hang Mordecai. But rather than hang him, he has to lead him through the city and say, this is the man that the king wants to honor. And so you're talking about a man's ego deflated. This was greatly done. Meanwhile, Mordecai went back home after he got through, and he was mourning with his head covered, and this is the end of chapter 6. He recounted to Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that happened. And his friends and his wife said, if Mordecai, before you, whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish origin, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him. And while they were still talking, the king's men came and said, okay, it's time for the banquet. So he went right quick to meet with the king and with Esther. And so the king said, okay, what do you want? And Esther said, what I want is I want the king to stop this horrible thing that's about to happen because all of the queen's people are about to be killed. And the king said, who has done this terrible thing? And she said, Haman has. And so the king was really angry then. And he got up and he went out in his garden. Well, Haman fell down on the couch where the queen was laying and was begging for his life. And the king came back in and said, is it bad enough that you were trying to kill my queen and now you would molest her even while I'm here? And it says they put a cloth over his head. That's executions, what that means. And so somebody told him, said, well, he has built gallows to hang Mordecai. And the king said, you just take him and hang him on his own gallows. And so Haman was hung on his own gallows, and the king's anger subsided. So King Ahasuerus then called Mordecai and Esther in and said, okay, I'm going to give you the signet ring. You write whatever decree you want to stop this. And what they did was they wrote a decree to the Jewish people that said, on this day you have the permission of the king to join together and to fight back, and you can actually fight to defend yourself for anybody, and you can kill anybody that considers you their enemy. And so that's exactly what they did on the day that had been appointed, because they couldn't change the law that said that the Jewish people were to be killed, and so now they have permission to fight back. Fact is, they were blessed, and they were able to overcome. And so it says that they killed approximately 75,000 of those who hated them. The Jewish people did. Mordecai was promoted as second in command. He was found favor with all the Jewish people. The other people liked him, and it says even a lot of the people became Jews because of it. They converted to Judaism. And so Mordecai then was very successful. And that pretty much covers what's in the book of Esther. Any question on Esther? That was a 15-minute synopsis of the book of Esther. Okay. Next week, Lord willing, we will go to Ezra. And we probably won't try to condense it all in one class. We will go to the book of Ezra next week. What we have done is we have covered the kingdom, the divided kingdom. We covered the captivity. And then the Ezra and Nehemiah is the return from captivity and the rebuilding of Jerusalem. So that's what we're looking at to cover as we go through.